Waited for it. A Hamilton fanfic written by Punk Hazard. Read by Black Lass.
How does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by providence, impoverished and squalor, grow up to be a hero and a scholar?
Eliza's gasp when Burr steps on stage. Part wonder, mostly admiration. Means that Alexander misses the entire first half of the song named after him, focused on his wife, and turning her eyes back on him. When he hears an appreciative hum from his other side, Lawrence very conspicuously admiring the actor's legs? Arms? Voice? Face? On second look, Alexander decides that if he weren't so occupied with trying to secure the attentions of Lawrence and his wife away from the man playing his murderer, he might be tempted to do the same. "Alexander," John says at last, squeezing his knee, "please watch the show. This man in your role has your energy exactly." "He looks nothing like me," Hamilton snaps back. But his eyes are bright, color high on his cheeks, and a smile tugging at the corners of his mouth. "They speak so quickly. And in verse," he observes. "Imagine how many words one could pack into a speech if I had known of this." "Please," Jefferson sneers from behind them. "You have words enough already." "If you are incapable of behavior befitting gentlemen such as yourselves," Washington chimes in, his voice chilly, "you would do well to leave so the rest of us might enjoy the show in peace." Jefferson mumbles something unintelligible, but he quiets and leans back. Hamilton just barely resists making a face at him. Alexander's never liked reminders of his childhood, but Eliza's eyes mist up when the chorus swells. She clasps his free hand with both of hers, his other held over his eyes, discreetly swiping away tears.
"Pardon me, are you Aaron Burr, sir?"
"That depends. Who's asking?"
"Oh, well, sure. Sir, I'm Alexander Hamilton. I'm at your service, sir. I have been looking for you."
"I'm getting nervous."
"Sir, I heard your name at Princeton. I was seeking an accelerated course of study when I got sort of out of sorts with a buddy of yours. I may have punched him. It's a blur, sir. He handles the financials."
"You punched the bursar."
"I never punched any bursar," Alexander informs the audience members with an earshot. But every one of his companions shushes him. He turns to look surreptitiously at Burr, who says nothing and makes no sign of having noticed any extra attention on him.
"Showtime, showtime, yo! I'm John Lawrence in the place to be. A 2 pints of Sam Adams, but I'm working on 3. Ha! Those red coats don't want it with me, cause I will pack, chick-a-plack these cops till I'm free."
"Is that me?" Lawrence asks later, sitting up straight, his expression delighted. He'd been in high spirits ever since learning of the Civil War, abolition, Barack Obama, then furious and melancholy as they passed a protest on the way into the theater. "After so many years, have we still failed to achieve justice?" But he'd soon cheered up again. "I don't think I was ever quite so short."
"M'appelle Lafayette, the Lancelot of the revolutionary set. I came from afar just to say bonsoir to the king, cause it's toi who is the best, c'est moi."
"My actor is suitably handsome," Lafayette declares upon his introduction, as Lawrence collapses against Hamilton's shoulder, muffling his laughter. "But my accent, it does not sound like this." "His accent sounds exactly like this," John whispers into Alexander's ear. In revenge for the full 10 seconds or so that Alexander spends with his jaw on the floor, Eliza very pointedly digs her nails into Alexander's thigh. Turning to her, repentant, he plants a kiss on her cheek and spends the rest of the song gazing intently at her face, murmuring such sweet nothings into her ear, that Lafayette and Lauren's mime vomiting.
You'll be back like before. I will fight the fight and win the war. For your love, for your praise, and I'll love you till my dying days. When you're gone, I'll go mad. So don't throw away this thing we had. Cause when push comes to shove, I will kill your friends and family to remind you of my love. Da 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 da.
The front row, Eliza, Alexander, Lawrence, and Lafayette, hiss and boo at the king's introduction, but fall quiet when the song begins. Washington says nothing at their lack of decorum.
I'll write to Congress and tell them we need supplies. You rally the guys, master the element of surprise. I'll rise above my station, organize your information till we rise to the occasion of our new nation. So,
here comes the general.
Rise up.
His right-hand man.
Ooh.
During the next song, out of respect for Washington's need for personal space, no one cuffs him on the shoulder, but almost everyone steals at least one glance. Burr, to Madison's left, resolutely does not. Lafayette and Lawrence cheer the loudest, excitedly shaking Alexander by the shoulder when the song ends. Washington's initial discomfort seems to fade, the stately bearing of the actor playing him already a somewhat better image than he had imagined himself with throughout his last military campaign.
Number three.
I know my sister like I know my own mind. You will never find anyone as trusting or as kind. If I tell her that I love him, she'd be silently resigned. He'd be mine. She would say I'm fine. She'd be lying. But when I fantasize at night, Alexander's eyes, as I romanticize what might have been if I hadn't sized him up so quickly. At least, my dear Eliza's his wife. At least I keep his eyes in my life.
I knew, Eliza whispers to a very uncomfortable Alexander at the end of the set. Seeing her sister, all of her wit, charm, and loving words immortalized, soothes whatever regret the songs dredge up. We are both grateful that you remained in our lives, my Hamilton. John! Alexander hisses. Gilbert! What are you two doing? That man is my mortal enemy! Heads bobbing in unison, matching each beat of the song. Lafayette ignores him, but John shakes himself out of it. When he stops headbanging, his heels begin to tap in tune with the song. I'm sorry, Alexander, says Lawrence. I can't seem to help myself. Alexander turns his head for help from his wife, only to see her in no better condition. Betsy!
Let me tell you what I wish I'd known. When I was young and dreamed of glory, you have no control.
Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
I know that we can win. I know that greatness lies in you. But remember from here on in,
history has its eyes on you. History has its eyes on you.
In all his years with the men sitting in the row in front of him, George Washington has never heard so much silence, or seen such rapt attention. He basks in it, at least until the Battle of Yorktown concludes. All three of them leaped to their feet, shouting and pumping their fists. Jefferson and Madison, seated on either side of him, groaned and clutched their temples, as if suffering from a headache.
Raise a glass to freedom, something they can never take away, no matter what they tell you. Raise a glass to the four of us. Tomorrow there'll be more of us telling the story of tonight.
They'll tell the story of tonight.
Raise a glass to freedom.
Eliza and John reach for Alexander at the same time, each taking a hand and squeezing it until the song ends. Hamilton turns to lock eyes with Lawrence, sighing deeply when the other man leans in close. "I'm sorry, Alexander," he says. "For leaving you so soon." "All's forgiven, John," lightly bumping their foreheads together. "You have no need to apologize to me for anything." "For anything except enjoying Burr's song." "Well, yes, that's a betrayal of the highest order."
"A civic lesson from a slaver. Hey, neighbor, your debts are paid because you don't pay for labor. We plant seeds in the South, we create and keep ranting. We know who's really doing the planting. And another thing, Mr. Age of Enlightenment, don't lecture me about the war. You didn't fight in it. You think I'm frightened of you, man? We almost died in the trench. Well, you were off getting high with the French. Thomas Jefferson always hesitant with the president. Medicine, there isn't a plan he doesn't jettison. Madison, you mad as a hatter, so take your medicine. Damn, you in worse shape than the national debt is in. Sitting there useless as two shits. Hey, turn around, bend over. I'll show you where my shoe fits. Excuse me. Madison, Jefferson, take a walk. Hamilton, take a walk."
Alexander hears a shuffle behind him, turns just enough to see Jefferson stand, and excuse himself to the restroom. He looks about as upset as Alexander has ever seen him, which is a cause for glee if he's ever had one. "If Jefferson looked like that," Alexander comments to John under his breath, "his pompous arrogance might have been more bearable." "Hard rock like Lancelot," John murmurs back, slapping the hand Lafayette extends to him.
"Hold your nose and close your eyes.
You want our leaders to save the day.
We don't get a say in what they trade away.
We dream of a brand new start.
But we dream in the dark for the most part.
Dark as a tomb where it happens. I've got to be in the room where it happens.
I've got to be
in the room where it happens.
I've got to be
in the room where it happens.
I've got to be in the room
where it happens.
I gotta be
in the room where it happens.
I wanna
be in the room where it happens."
Click, boom.
"Why has Burr sung all the best songs? This is marvelous! I thought this play was named after myself." For the first and last time all night, Aaron speaks up. "We've made our peace, Hamilton," he says, leaning forward in his seat to mumble directly into Alexander's ear. "Talk less." "They offered," John sputters, as Hamilton avoids Eliza's pointed stare. "That was an offer for the same kind of consummation you offered me at your marriage, if I have ever heard one, Alexander. You were a fool." "I know, John."
"Then I said,
Well, I should head back home. She turned red. She led me to a bed, let her legs spread and said,
stay.
Hey.
Hey.
That's when I began to pray, Lord, show me how to say no to this. I don't know how to say no to this. Oh my God, she looks so helpless. And her body's saying, hell yes. No, show me how to say no to this. I don't know how to say no to this. In my mind, I'm trying to go. Then her mouth is on mine, and I don't say
no.
You did what, Alexander?
One last time. Relax, have a drink with me. One last time. Let's take a break tonight, and then we'll teach him how to say goodbye. To say goodbye, you and I.
Alexander sneaks several looks back at Washington, simultaneously full of respect and embarrassment at some of the less controlled moments he'd shared with him. Lafayette and Lawrence half turn in their seats, meeting eyes with the general, and acknowledging a nod from him before settling back.
The Reynolds pamphlet. Have you read this?
Alexander Hamilton, at a torrid affair. He wrote it down right there.
Highlights.
The charge against me is a connection with one James Reynolds. For purposes of improper speculation, my real crime is an amorous connection with his wife. For a considerable time, with his knowing consent.
Damn.
I had frequent meetings with her, most of them at my own house.
At his own house.
At his own house.
Damn.
Mrs. Hamilton, with our children being absent on a visit to her father.
No.
Have you read this?
Alexander, John hisses into his ear. You didn't! Eliza's eyes slide shut, a pained expression on her face. He did. I can't believe I thought you were a genius, Lawrence continues, eyes wide in horror, while Hamilton sinks deeper into his seat. Could you not have consulted someone? Anyone who would have told you that this was a terrible idea? Rumors die, Alexander, and everyone knows newsmen are scum. I would have consulted you, Hamilton snipes back, and immediately regrets it at Lauren's stricken face. Without missing a beat, he reaches forward and grabs his hand, squeezing gently. You see, John, imagine how differently everything would have turned out had you been with me. Well, Eliza says lightly, a dangerous smile on her face. I suppose you wouldn't have needed Miss Reynolds. Betsy! John and I never... Dearest Eliza, Lawrence interrupts, covering Hamilton's mouth with his hand. Alexander was always insufferable when he was not at your side. Even when he promised to give me his fullest attention, he would be daydreaming about his reunion with you. If he was trying to arouse my envy, he has always been quite successful at it. John grins at Eliza's smile, now softening as she looks at him. I would have boxed him about the ears for marring your honor, knowing what you mean to him. Your Excellency! Hamilton declares, wrenching Lauren's hands away and turning in his seat to plead with Washington. I am being attacked on two fronts! Washington pretends not to hear him.
Meet the latest graduate of King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dag, I'm amazing, astonished. The scholars say I got the same virtuosity your brains as my pops. The ladies say my brain's not where the resemblance stops. I'm only 19, but my mind is older. Gotta be my own man, like my father, but bolder. I shoulder his legacy with pride. I used to hear him say that someday I would
blow us all away.
Ladies, I'm looking for Mr. George.
Lauren smiles when the first bars play. A cheerful whistle accompanying a familiar young man onto the stage. Is that the same lad? Alexander frantically checks the playbill in his hands. Philip! Eliza's voice is soft, barely audible, but both Lawrence and Hamilton hear it.
No.
Excuse us, Alexander says, one hand wrapping gently around Eliza's upper arm, as John and Lafayette move into the aisle to allow them to pass. John briefly pats Eliza's shoulder, but looks to Lafayette in confusion as they sit back down.
Philip was killed in a duel, explains Lafayette, with Georges Eaker.
Ladies, I'm looking for Mr. Georges Eaker. Made a speech last week, our 4th of July speaker.
I'll only be gone a moment, John says, scrambling out of his seat, Lafayette on his heels. They nod to Washington, before disappearing out the back door in search of Alexander and Eliza.
Let me tell you what I wish I'd known when I was young and dreamed of glory. You have no control.
Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
Madison's still dabbing at his eyes by the time the front row settles back into their seats, this time with Eliza seated between Alexander and John, Lafayette to Hamilton's left. As the show wraps up, Washington puts his hand on Alexander's shoulder, squeezing gently for a few seconds before leaning back.
Eliza!
I put myself back in the narrative.
Eliza!
I stop wasting time on tears. I live another 50 years. It's not enough.
Eliza!
I interview every soldier who fought by your side.
She tells our story.
I try to make sense of your thousands of pages of writings. You really do.
John and Lafayette catch Eliza's eyes before she looks bashfully away, unnerved by their intensity and moved by the tears in them, burying her face against Alexander's shoulder. Alexander has his arm around her, and he breathes a shaky sigh against her temple, but he holds himself together until the woman on stage pauses, her expression and voice softening.
Oh, can I show you what I'm proudest of? I established the first private orphanage in New York City.
The orphanage.
I helped raise hundreds of children. I get to see them growing up.
His voice cracks, face twisting with emotion. An orphanage? It's still there, says John, reading a page of acknowledgments from the pamphlet they were given before the show. You've outlasted all of us, Elizabeth Schuyler Hamilton.
And you have done more good, says Lafayette, a smile on his lips.
What I find to be the biggest surprise, he drawls later, as he pulls Lawrence aside, the audience around them erupting into applause, is how this musical has endeared to me, of all people in the world, Burr.
The end. Thanks for listening.
Oh, I can't wait to see you again. It's only a matter of time.
Will they tell your story? Who lives, who dies, who tells your story? Will they tell your story? Who tells your story?